It's good to have you with us today. I'm Barbara DeLand, and this is Guest Interview. We hear the phrase food security used a lot these days, and are seeing many people beginning or returning to grow their own vegetables and other edibles. Our guest, Kristen Lowett, has been doing research in Western Newfoundland around this subject. Thank you for coming today, Kristen.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. It's good to see you. Please tell us first a little bit about yourself and how you decided to focus on this subject.
Sure. So I kind of got interested in...
First, where are you from?
I'm from Ontario. I grew up in Ontario, in Newmarket, kind of north of Toronto.
Yes.
And then lived in Nova Scotia for about 3 or 4 years before coming here.
And what drew you here?
Partly to go to school and complete a PhD program at Memorial. Was also kind of, you know, interested in trying to live more in Atlantic Canada and stay in this part of the country after having moved to Nova Scotia from Ontario and just really, really enjoying that province.
Yes. So you wanted to come to the heart of Atlantic Canada.
Can't go much further east.
That's right. That's right. And so now are you working academically in a certain area, certain department?
I am. So I'm a PhD candidate in the Interdisciplinary Studies PhD program, which is still, it's a fairly new program at Memorial. So I'm co-supervising sociology and geography.
Are you? And what decided you to focus on the subjects you've chosen?
I think I first kind of, I guess really kind of got interested in kind of food studies and food issues during my master's program.
Which was in what?
It was in environmental studies at Dalhousie University in Halifax. And my master's research there was about farmers markets and looking at relationships in farmers markets among producers and consumers. And these farmers markets as community spaces. So I did interviews with, you know, food producers throughout the province and customers about their experiences at the farmers market. Was also introduced to some work around kind of food security, participatory food security projects are happening in the province of Nova Scotia at the time. So when I came here, I kind of put those two together and kind of saw a gap in terms of the work I'd been doing, and I think a lot of the work that is done around food security and local food systems, in that it doesn't really often include coastal communities or fisheries resources and fisheries. So that was my kind of initial interest in this, was trying to bring these two areas of interest, areas of research together.
Were you as surprised as I was when I came at how dependent people had become on food coming from outside the island, being trucked in or flown in, as opposed to growing much of it themselves as they had done in previous generations? Did you find that surprising?
Certainly, I mean, as an island, I mean, we face a unique, you know, situation as an island province, you know, in terms of reliability of supply and greater distances and longer distances over which food has to be transported and goes on the ferry and then it's trucked all the way here to, you know, to the East Coast. Or if you're on the West Coast, often food is trucked to St. John's and then goes back to the West Coast. Yes. It doesn't just stay there when it goes off the ferry.
But as opposed to growing it themselves, because two generations ago, everybody who had any sort of land at all usually had a garden, kitchen garden, and maybe another garden,
or
one or two animals around, and that wasn't that long ago.
No, I mean, you're right, it's probably, you know, a couple generations ago, and that's sort of what's been called an occupational pluralism that involved kind of, you know, fishing and gardening in the summer, and then the hunting and trapping in the winter, and, you know, putting away your saltfish for the winter. I mean, it was vital to, you know, settlement here as well. I mean, otherwise it was really too expensive to keep a labor force here, so, you know, merchants relied on people having to do some of this stuff themselves and provision their own food.
So to me it was kind of sort of a quick switch from all of that to food supermarkets or grocery stores.
Well, I think, I mean, particularly, I mean, that kind of quick switch, I mean, I think that really started, you know, in the 1950s. I mean, I think particularly when, you know, Newfoundland joined Canada, I think there were some pretty rapid transformations of the economy from kind of merchant, you know, economy to one that's more based on industrial capitalism, and there's this influx of more modern goods and services and more imported foods as well.
And probably some of the mainland grocers saw a good opportunity to expand here too, I would think.
Well, they may have. And I know in the Bombay region, you know, one of the critical changes that some, you know, households identified in terms of where they were getting their food was even, you know, the highway that was built, I think in the late 60s, connecting Bombay mm-hmm. to Deer Lake. And, you know, one person I spoke to said to me, you know, people, you know, left the gardens and went to the stores, right? Mm-hmm. And so there definitely has been an increasingly, you know, increasing reliance on purchased foods over the past, you know, 40
years. Is it pretty similar to Nova Scotia where you lived before for a few years?
I would imagine so. I mean, I didn't do as much work in rural communities mm-hmm. in Nova Scotia, but I mean, mm-hmm. I think the history would be relatively, you know, similar in which you do have these smaller rural towns and many also fisheries-dependent communities, right, which are also experiencing, I think, fairly similar changes and challenges in many communities in Newfoundland Bay.
Where are you mainly working? What parts of the island are you mainly working in, and what are you trying to find out here?
So my research is focused in the Bombay region on the west coast of the island. So Bombay, it's a fjord that's in Growthmoorne National Park.
Beautiful spot.
It is beautiful. Yeah. And there's five communities I was working in, and they're all surrounded in the park, by the park. So I focus in the towns of Rocky Harbor, Norris Point, and then on the other side of the bay, Woody Point, Glen Burnie, Birchhead, Stolbrook, and Trout River. So mm-hmm. there were the five communities in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And my research took place there as part of a larger research team called the Community University Research for Recovery Alliance. And that's an interdisciplinary team of researchers looking at recovery of fisheries and also fisheries communities. And that's focused on the West Coast.
So you've been involved in some of that too.
Yes, I have. Uh-huh. So my work's also taken place through that research team as well.
With the fisheries. Is that sea fisheries as well as
it's mostly inland? Yeah, mostly marine fisheries, although mm-hmm. I think there has been a little mm-hmm. bit of work with some inland fisheries. And certainly there are inland recreational fisheries
yes.
that, you know, some people also
yes.
participate in, as well
yes.
as, you know.
Yes.
Fishery.
How would you define food security?
I think it's a good question, and I get it comes up, you know, a lot in talking to people, sort of different ideas about what that means, right? Often, you know, sometimes people think about food safety, right, in terms of, you know, contaminants and food supply, for example. So food security is it is different than that, and more broad than that. So it's often, I mean,
you're not working on the food safety part. You're working on the food security part.
Yes, and I'd say food safety is sort of one piece
yes.
of food security.
Yeah.
And so food security really in terms of, you know, how is it more commonly kind of defined?
Yes.
There was a World Food Summit hosted by the United Nations in 1996, and they came up with a definition of food security. And it was basically about, you know, everyone should have physical and economic access to sufficient and safe and nutritious food, right, to meet their dietary preferences. And so that's one of the basic definitions that people commonly use. But of course, I mean, the notion came up before then, right? I mean, particularly after World War II in the 1950s and the Green Revolution, there was more food. And so then food security was very much linked to food aid at that time. It was kind of a way
food
of
aid, yes.
getting, you know, rid of some of the surplus food and also doing development work at the same time.
Because there were several countries after the war which were really in terrible mm-hmm. shape agriculturally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What have you learned, or let's first of all focus on what are you trying to find out?
Yes. Okay. So, and so that links back to, you know, the previous question about what is food security. And so in recent years, there's been this shift, I think, from thinking about food security, in not only in terms of food aid, not only in terms of something that is at an individual or household level, but also something that involves communities, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this notion of community food security has become more prevalent. And so that's where you're seeing this kind of rise of interest in these kind of more community-based food projects, so farmers markets and community gardens, mm-hmm. and community support agriculture and so forth. And this notion that the community ability to influence food systems and have some say over how food systems work is really crucial to sustained food security.
So in your dissertation,
yes.
at the end of all this, what are you trying to show in 50 words or fewer?
My work is really about trying to link some of this, I think, really kind of emerging excitement and growth that we're seeing around this idea of food security and these and these kind of local and more sustainable food systems ideas that are circulating. And what does this mean, really, in the west coast of the island here? And what does, you know, if we think about fisheries, what does that contribute to these discussions? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What is the role of fisheries in developing more local, more sustainable food systems? And how is that understood, you know, by people that live in this area in terms of how they get food and,
that's right.
and what they're eating?
Yes. And what have you learned? Well, when did you start?
The first time I went to Bombay was summer of 2009. I did some initial research in the area again through the Cura team.
My question really should be, how much time have you spent on it so far?
This is about three years and a bit.
And what have you learned so far?
What have I learned? So my work was really about trying to understand some of the changes in food systems that have taken place in this area. And there have been really quite tremendous changes in this region, as there have been in many other parts of the island. I mean, we already talked about, you know, the 1950s and kind of the changes in the economy and that took place at that time. And so one thing, you know, one of the main findings from my work, certainly there have been substantial changes and there is a greater reliance on purchased foods. But, you know, if we look at how households are acquiring foods, at least in the rural communities around Bombay where I worked, it's still very much, I think, based on a combination of food purchasing from stores and supermarkets in combination with people providing their own food and self-provisioning.
So people are
people
still
are,
having gardens,
yes.
And they haven't stopped. Did they stop, or has that been something new?
Certainly some households have, but many have continued. I mean, older residents have continued to garden. And, you know, some younger families I spoke to were getting involved sort of for the first time. And there were a variety of reasons for that. I mean, one was kind of, you know, wanting to connect with the community or family tradition in gardening. For some people, it related to, you know, more of these kind of more recent concerns we hear about around where is our food coming from and, you know, is it local? Is it
what's
safe?
In
Who's
it?
Growing it? What's in it? All these sorts of reasons, right? So those were also motivations for people.
And I've heard some young parents wanting their children to see how it comes, that it doesn't arrive in a box or in a package, that how food actually grows.
Absolutely. I mean, there were some families I interviewed that, you know, were commercial fishing families, you know, would go out and participate in commercial fisheries, but then also would go out in the recreational cod fisheries so they could take their children with them because they wanted to go out in the boat and they wanted them to be able to go and you know, see how this how they could do this and this work, right? So, and that was an important motivation for a number of households with young children was gardening so their kids could see where this stuff was coming from and, you know, have an idea of how to continue to do some of that.
And are you aware of many differences between the west of the island and the more eastern areas of the island in this whole area that you're looking at?
I haven't really done much
comparative
work across the island. I mean, my research is mostly focused.
Do you have any hunches?
Well, I think, you know, certainly some of the differences, I mean, one of the differences I think is even just between rural and urban regions. And I mean, I know it's a very broad distinction and there's, you know, all sorts of kind of things that can perhaps fit in between that. But I do think some of the rural regions, and including in Bombay, you know, do face particular challenges, even if we're thinking about purchased foods. You know, we spoke about more of a reliance on purchased foods, but certainly, I mean, in the Bombay area, there's no full service supermarket. I mean, most of the grocery stores are relatively small convenience stores. There's not a lot in the way of fresh fruits and vegetables. There's only frozen meats. Food prices are generally higher, and that's been shown in, you know, other research.
So those are all reasons that people might want to get into it.
Well, those are also potential reasons that people would. And they're also, you know, it also speaks to inequities in terms of urban and rural access to, you know, retail and purchase goods, which is, again, something that has particular implications for seniors or people that are less mobile and can't travel greater distances to get to supermarkets that you often have to do in rural regions.
Yes. Or even if you don't have your own access, sometimes it takes a vehicle and other ways to get to the farmers who do have it.
Well, that's absolutely true with even those, you know, those we call local, you know, food systems or local food sources. You have to get to them too. People have to travel, right? And particularly, you know, the households that transportation, you know, mentioned, relying on friends and families to get, you know, to supermarkets or wherever. And
go ahead.
I'd say often those purchases from those more local sources that we might think of, like, you know, farmers or the small farm markets, which are located in Cormac, and as I said, a Deer Lake on the west coast. Households often went there at the same time they then go on to the supermarket, right? So I think often we think about, okay, here's local food systems over here, and here's the supermarkets over here, right? And we're going to try and patronize the local stuff. But, you know, they work together mm-hmm. much more closely than mm-hmm. that in terms of actually getting food to feed your family.
And sometimes I know some of the supermarkets are carrying local foods. Mm-hmm. Is that happening in the West too, somewhat? Some of the grocery stores carrying some of the local products,
the same
and vegetables and things. Mm-hmm. Do you see this? Well, not consider aside from the people who have been farming for a long time and who are well-established farming families. Do you think that the people who are getting into it now are returning to it now for more like kitchen gardens or other gardens? Do you think that's a phase or a fad? Or do you think that's going to continue? What do you see happening with that whole movement?
Well, I think there's, you know, a range of reasons that people are getting involved in kind of, we'll say right now, provisioning their own food in terms of gardening, for example, or even fishing or hunting. And, you know, one thing that really kind of struck me in my research and I was interested in is, you know, again, the reasons people are doing that. And I think particularly in, you know, the rural and coastal regions of this province, there is, as we spoke about, a longer tradition in doing that. And so that was a key reason that many people wanted to either continue doing it or getting into it for the first time and had a family history in that.
Uh-huh.
And there were, I remember a conversation I had with one woman that kind of stuck with me. And, you know, she said to me, you know, I'm not green. I don't need this and that. I'm not picky. Don't need everything local. I don't need to have everything just so and buy all these things. But I just want to know where my food comes from. And again, I mean, her family had had animals for,
yes,
you know, generations, yes, earlier. She'd grown up with them. She was keeping her own animals. And then somehow, you know, was expressing a particular reason she was doing that, which might be perhaps a little bit different than some of the history underlying the more current, say, local food movement that we're seeing take off.
Okay. She was more retracing her traditional steps and her family background. Are you a farmer or a gardener?
I do a little bit of gardening.
Or have been.
I have a small plot in a new community garden that started up here in St. John's, the Cavell Community Garden, near Cave Vitti. So that's, I have a lot of kale right now. I've certainly gotten some stuff from that. Also, you know, try and buy things, you know, locally to the extent that I can around here from the St. John's Farmers Market or from other.
How much time have you spent in the West?
About, I spent summer of 2009, a couple months out there that summer, and then probably about 3 or 4 months doing field work last year, in which, you know, I did interviews with households in that area, and I also spent time, did some observation with fish harvesters and tourism operators in the region
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you happen to know where this whole food security and back to gardening and back to community gardens originated in Canada?
So it's an interesting question. So this more, I mean, there's been a lot of attention around local food systems, you know, and the 100-mile diet and buy local and eat local, and we see even those things in the supermarket.
But that's not necessarily Canadian. I'm just wondering, in Canada, where did this really get started? Do you know?
I'm not sure specifically within Canada. I mean, really this kind of movement, if you want to call it that. I mean, it really kind of had its origins in the U.S. and in California, which perhaps isn't a big surprise given all the agricultural activity. And there was a community food security coalition that started up, and they were addressing some challenges that they want to see in the U.S. Farm Bill. And I think that really spawned this and was picked up, I think, in Canada. And there's a lot of linkages in that movement.
I'm wondering if that began in B.C.
I'm not sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know specifically, but...
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any surprises that you've found in your studies, that things that surprised you, that you would not have expected?
Mm-hmm. There were a few things. Certainly, I think, you know, one was the extent to which people are still, I think, doing some stuff for themselves in terms of provisioning food. There was a survey about seafood consumption that was distributed to all the households in the Bombay area and returned to me here in St. John's. And one of the results from that was that 70% of the households that were surveyed said they were salting their own fish. And that really struck me. I was you know, I wasn't sure.
Still.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, I anticipated that that number would not have been as high.
Yes.
And certainly.
What was that percentage?
70.
70.
Of the survey. Yeah, yeah. Of the households that were surveyed. And we had just over 300 surveys.
Would this be harvesters' families or would this be other people as well?
No, it was all the residents in Bombay that were surveyed. So they were not necessarily involved in fishing at all.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah. That would be interesting. Mm-hmm. Did you ever try salting fish?
I've done a little bit with some people. I haven't done it myself. Yes. Myself. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. And any other surprises or any other parts of your research that you didn't expect?
Mm-hmm. Well, another kind of surprising result, and I don't know if it's surprising, but I wasn't sure if I was going to find any kind of clear trend. And one was that we did see, certainly, you know, people are, as you mentioned, salting fish, but we also did note a decline in consumption of eating local seafood from many types of seafood. So there was a chart on this survey of 15 types of seafood, local seafood, and people were asked to indicate how often they're eating this, right? Uh-huh. Do they eat it often? Do they eat it now and then? Yeah. Or do they eat it never? Uh-huh. And they were asked to indicate that for now, which was 2011, and then for 5 years ago. And for most of those types of seafood, you know, including cod and crab and lobster and halibut and mackerel, a lot of the big fish species, they said they were eating them less often than they were 5 years ago. And that was kind of surprising
and
that
total.
Such a overall. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was kind of surprising that such a kind of a clear trend emerged.
Oh.
And I think there's a variety of reasons for that, and I think it speaks to, you know, the question of what can we do to bring fisheries more into discussions around food security and local food systems. How do we strengthen their contributions? And you know, certainly we've seen a lot of changes taking place to fisheries and fisheries communities and fewer fish harvesters, mm-hmm. Certainly mm-hmm. challenges getting young people involved in the fishery, shorter seasons, you know, reduced quotas. So mm-hmm. all these things have implications, I think, for how much seafood people are eating.
I'm also thinking maybe that the more different kinds of foods have become available, and so people want to try some of those other things which traditionally they didn't really have access to, mm-hmm. so they might want to do it for some of those reasons. What kind of fish or fish types of marine life are people eating in the West? Are they similar to what people fish and eat in the East?
I would say so. I mean, not surprisingly. I mean, we asked, what's your favorite type of seafood? And I think it was, you know, 97 or 98% of households said cod.
Yes.
It was a big surprise,
yes,
right? Uh-huh. I mean, after that, it was lobster and halibut.
Do they fish for shrimp much in that area?
Offshore, uh-huh. there's more fishing for shrimp. And so,
generally,
people are eating shrimp, and that is actually one of the types of seafood that households said in the survey they were getting more from supermarkets, which may speak to that because you have a sort of year-round offshore trawler industry which can actually provide shrimp year-round to supermarkets. So that was also an interesting finding.
Oh, you mean they buy in supermarkets Newfoundland waters, shrimp from Newfoundland waters. Okay.
Possibly, although, you know, we asked about what we call local seafood from the province, but it's also possible some of that would be, again, imported Pacific.
I wasn't aware of the crab and the shrimp mm-hmm. fisheries and also the lobster fisheries, mm-hmm. and I was more aware of it in other parts of the East, but not so much around Newfoundland. But I really didn't know about the number of shrimp available,
mm-hmm.
and I think a lot of people don't realize that. I think a lot of people buy shrimp from Thailand and all kinds of weird and wonderful places far away without realizing that so much is available here.
We do. I mean, the North Atlantic shrimp are they're smaller.
Yes.
They're tiny compared to the jumbo Pacific shrimp. But I think, you know,
they're clean water, cold.
And they have a nice taste, right? And, but that is, I think there's a bit of a perception, I mean, even among tourism operators I spoke with, they wanted to source local shrimp, but they were concerned it wouldn't present as well on the plate, and people were looking for big shrimp, right?
Oh,
so again, there's a little bit around, what are we expecting, I think, when we see shrimp?
Advertising.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes. And what are people fishing for out there?
Oh, I mean, there's a range of species that are fished. So there is still a small commercial cod fishery.
Uh-huh.
And certainly, you know, shellfish species, so crab and lobster have become a lot more important in recent years.
Yes.
Mackerel. Shrimp is, more uh-huh. offshore. And then there's mackerel, herring, turbot
uh-huh. as well. And how about inland? What kinds of
So fish? Most of the harvesters I spent time with, the inshore harvesters, were really, would start fishing cod around, end of June into October.
Inland cod?
Inshore, in the inshore fishery.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you mean inland, sorry.
I'm talking about.
You mean freshwater fisheries.
Yes.
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 So recreationally, certainly there are salmon, smelts, trout, and so some households I spoke to will go and, you know, fly fish for salmon. Okay. There's a limited number that you can
catch. But not much commercial?
No, not that I know of.
Okay. All right. What have you enjoyed the most in doing all of this research? You're making me hungry right now. But being around different area and different people's interests, what have you enjoyed the most?
Well, I mean, certainly, I mean, you know, the most exciting part of this for me was actually getting to go out to Bombay and, you know, do the actual research part and field work and talk to people and, you know, meet households and families in that region. And some people kind of really, you know, took it upon themselves to teach me about, you know, food in Newfoundland. I remember going to a lunch in one home, and there was the jam jams and the hard bread and the fish and brews, and is it the pineapple crush, or that's a flavor here, I think, only on the island. So it was all these things, and greeted me to this lunch. So certainly, I mean, it's been a great experience getting to, you know, connect with people and form relationships that hopefully extend beyond, you know, just the immediate research.
I'm sure. What do you think the public needs to keep in mind about food security and our food supply here on the island?
Well, I mean, as an island province, and, you know, island and remote province, Newfoundland, Labrador, I mean, I think we face challenges, and we also have particular opportunities. I mean, some of those challenges certainly relate to the distance food travels and the imported foods we have. You know, but we also do have, I think, particular opportunities in terms of the food traditions and the skills that we still do have in this province. And I think
of not only catching but preparing.
Yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh. For sure. And also thinking about, you know, the fisheries resources, marine resources that we do have. And I really think, you know, it's sort of a values-based question, but how do we want fisheries, what role do we want these local fisheries we have here in Newfoundland Labrador to play in our food system? Do we want to be able to eat local seafood? Yeah. And so much of our seafood continues to be exported off the island. It's really geared to commodity production.
Right.
And I think thinking about what we want to see here in terms of our food system might allow us to ask some of those questions around.
Well, from what we read, sometimes you think maybe there's nothing available, you know, because it is frozen and shipped away.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose probably one of the best ways to pass this on to your children is by example. And we don't have time to go into that, but that's another subject.
Mm-hmm.
Our guest today has been Kristen Lowett, currently doing research for her PhD through Memorial University in the area of food security. Thank you very much for coming, Kristen. It's been very nice having you here.
Thank you.
Any special quick second visitor messages to our listeners?
Just, you know, thank you for listening. And if you want to learn more about some of the projects and some of the work I've been talking about, our website you can visit is www.curra.ca.
C-U-R-R-A?
Yes.
Okay,
dot
again,
C-A.
Please.
C-U-R-R-A dot
www.curra.ca. Okay. Thank you very much. My thanks to Roger Angel for your important work today. And for all of you who enjoy eating, it's been great to have had you listening with us today. I'm Barbara DeLand, and this has been Guest Interview.